Okay, now that we're all settled, we're going to take a look this morning at the role of the doorkeeper. I have to tell you, I had no idea of the involvement of the doorkeepers, even how old the position was, how important it was. It's not that I minimized the role of doorkeeper, but it's just that I had no idea. I thought it was probably for a younger brother who's new in the truth, and, you know, let's put him in that position to get him going. Probably not a good idea. Holman Bible Dictionary defines a doorkeeper as a person guarding access to an important or restricted place. Now, all of us know that when we enter a Christadelphian meeting hall, we're met by a brother who welcomes us at the door. This appointed position, and the clue there is appointed, that appointed position is called the doorkeeper. If it's at a memorial meeting, then the doorkeeper will want to find out whether or not you are Christadelphian, what particular fellowship you're associated with. And the purpose of this inquiry, of course, is to determine whether or not we will be allowed to participate in the breaking of bread. This is the first and the foremost duty of the doorkeeper. Now, it often happens that the very first arrival at the memorial service is either a visitor from out of town, the speaker for the day, or a brother and sister from another town. So warm-hearted, helpful doorkeeper, like a welcoming host, will be delighted to offer the hospitality of the ecclesia to see that the guests, the visitors, feel at home and at ease. So in the course of his greeting, the doorkeeper takes this opportunity to secure the correct name and the correct ecclesia of each visitor and passes that information to the presider for the day, or to the recording brother, or both. At an evening service or a special lecture, the doorkeeper should ensure that no visitor goes unattended. A welcoming smile, the finding of a good seat, the furnishing of a hymn book and a Bible is all part of this low-profile and willing attention. As the time for the beginning of the service draws near, the doorkeeper's contribution becomes even more important. He it is who, by his manner and respect for punctuality, will convey to the last visitors and to the occasional brother or sister who has not yet taken a seat that the time for quietness and for attention has come. The presider will take his cue from the watchful doorkeeper and will know that he may begin the meeting without any sudden rushing around or noisy closing of doors to break the sense of anticipation and the readiness for worship. It's a good thing for all who serve to have a collection of scriptures upon which to draw help from, to draw direction and to uplift. At first sight, it might seem that the doorkeeper would be hard-pressed to find anything to meet his needs. But on the contrary, there's ample help if we look for it in our daily readings of the Word. Contrary to popular thought, the doorkeeper's role at a memorial service, at a lecture, or any ecclesial function is a great work. And the ecclesia can never say, "I have no need of thee." Our service is part of the whole. If the ecclesia is a house with a great treasure, which it is, then we are among the keepers of the watch of the King's house. Ours may be the first spoken word, the first action, the first welcome to bring light into the life of someone in darkness. We may remember also that great moments often come at unexpected times. So Naaman came with his horses and chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. He met only the doorkeeper, but he had words of a new life to speak to Naaman. So it may be with us. A word at the appropriate time is all that is needed. We all remember the case of Elisha and Naaman? No? All right. Well, the gist of it is this. Rather than personally receiving Naaman when he arrived in Elisha's house, Elisha merely sent a messenger to the door who told Naaman to cure his affliction by dipping himself 7 times in the Jordan River. Naaman, who had expected the prophet himself to come out to him and perform some kind of impressive ritual magic, angrily refused to do what the doorkeeper had told him to do, and he prepared to go home, unhealed. Only after Naaman's slaves suggest to their master that he has nothing to lose by at least trying it, he does as he's told and finds himself healed. Naaman returned to Elisha with lavish gifts, which Elisha flatly refused to accept. Naaman also renounced his former god, Rimmon, after being cured by Elisha, and accepted the God of Israel. So it was Naaman's doorkeeper who it was Elisha's doorkeeper who introduced Naaman to the God of Israel through the prophet Elisha. Our doorkeeping duties extend to the end of the meeting. The little distractions that occur, whether they be a persistent cough to be relieved by a sip of water, the noise of children in the hall when all is quiet, are additional duties that the doorkeeper takes in his stride without fuss and without creating more disturbance. When others begin to leave for home, the doorkeeper is still busy with his responsibilities. No visitor to the service where the gospel of life is proclaimed should depart without a simple farewell and the hope of meeting again. It's easy enough, of course, to strive for perfection, and while we can rarely fulfill it, that's no reason for lowering our standards. Rather, it's a desire to strive for the ideal. The day when we shall meet the true doorkeeper, as we all know, is not far away. How will we do in that first exchange of glance? If in this life we have followed the path of humility and willing service made plain in the life of the faithful steward and the doorkeeper to life eternal, with a constant prayer of being rather a doorkeeper in the house of Yahweh than a dweller in the tents of wickedness, then we will fare well. Now, what about the history of doorkeeping? And this is where we'll get the Bibles out. In biblical times, being the doorkeeper was a very important and privileged job, as it is in our time, but perhaps even more so. It was only entrusted to the most capable and loyal individuals. The doorkeeper's job was to make sure that no one who was unclean or undeserving would be allowed to enter the temple. In this way, God's house would not be defiled. He also made sure that those who were able to enter in did so rightly and were properly purified to enter the Lord's presence, and then properly paid their tithe and reverence. If he didn't do his duty, then the temple would be defiled. Now, equally important is the Hebrew and Greek words for doorkeeper. The Hebrew word is shoer, S-H-O-E-R. The Greek is thuroros, T-H-U-R-O-R-O-S. And this is important when we look at the King James and determine whether a porter, whether a doorkeeper, whether a steward has any of those names, because there are times when those words do not apply to our doorkeeper. So the gates of a city and of a temple or the temple courts rather, so closely resembled the door of a house that the same Hebrew word was used for doorkeeper and gatekeeper. It's often translated by the less definite word porter. There have been some most remarkable doorkeepers. Can we think of any?
The angels.
Sure.
What?
The angel, the flaming sword.
They were
kept away, kept them away from the tree of life. So we might consider that the first doorkeeper.
Well, and he was directed to do that by God.
Yes, absolutely. As were all the others. So what's the next one? Good. Yeah. Yeah. After somebody closed the door of the ark. Who did that? Who closed the door of the ark? Through his mediator? Okay. Yep. So angels, priests, soldiers, all have been doorkeepers. And their presence has made a difference. Consider, as we did, the moment when the angel of God shut the door of the ark. A world was coming to an end, and the redeemed of Yahweh were being saved by that same force that would later destroy the wicked. In shutting the door, he not only protected those in the ark, but shut all others out. Or we might remember the darkness of the night in Sodom, when the two angels pulled Lot into the house and shut the door. These two stood between the blind and the seeing, between the doers of evil and the friends of the doorkeeper, at the door of Lot's house in Genesis 19. But even early on in Scripture, we learn, as we mentioned before, of doorkeepers. In Genesis 3, verse 24, Adam and Eve were compelled to leave the Garden of Eden, and Yahweh placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims with a flaming sword that turned every way to keep the way. The verb to keep there in this verse is from the Hebrew shamar, which means to preserve as well as to guard. Think of the guards placed in the house by the Lord in the house of the Lord, rather, by Jehoiada, on the day when Athaliah cried, "Treason!" as the servants of Yahweh shouted, "God save the king." Those men stood between the force of evil and the cause of righteousness. Now, Brother Mansfield tells us that the priests and Levites under the Mosaic covenant not only preserved the offerings of the people, but preserved the holy place from unwanted intrusion on the part of those not qualified to enter. As we said before, they would not let anyone in the temple who would defile it. They had to keep the charge of the tabernacle, just as the Edenic sword kept the way of the tree of life. Now, of course, it may seem a far cry from those days to our own, and from the simple duties of an ecclesial doorkeeper to the crucial acts that changed the course of history. Yet, it's an appointed ecclesial position, and we should not take it lightly. The same biblical principles that are applied to other appointed positions are equally necessary and should be applied for the position of doorkeeper. A doorkeeper should be at his post in good time. He should be the first person to be present, otherwise part of his job has been neglected. Now, others might be late, but not the doorkeeper. The details are often the very things which make for a smooth running of a memorial service, which, as we all know, is the most important thing that we do in life, the most important thing that we do on a weekly basis. Nothing is as crucial as how we act in our service at a memorial meeting. The hymn books and the Bibles readily available to all may be small matters, but a keen doorkeeper knows where they are so that his service at the door can be attended to without unnecessary distraction. Now, in the writings before the exile, reference is made to porters at the gates of the cities Mahanaim and Samaria. Let's look at 2 Samuel 18 and verse 26. The porters at the gates of the cities of Mahanaim and Samaria. Malcolm, would you read that for us? You want to read that?
Sure. The watchman saw an old man running. The watchman called unto the porter and said, "Behold, another man running along." The king said, "He also bringeth tidings."
In these early writings, there's also a mention of a small number of keepers of the threshold of the temple, whose duties included the gathering of money from the people for temple purposes and the care of the sacred vessels. They held an honorable position. Let's look at 2 Kings 25, verse 18. And the captain of the guard took Sariah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the three keepers of the door. So the captain of the guard took the chief priest, the second priest, and three keepers of the door. That's how important that position was. It's how honorable that position was. And they occupy the chambers of the temple. The same term is used to describe officers in the household of the king of Persia. Let's turn to Esther 2 and verse 21. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. So they that kept the door. So, it's not a surprise to us that the idea of a doorkeeper at a memorial service is a new one. It's that position has been around far longer than we have. It's been around since early biblical times. So it's not a position that was created by any brothers or sisters in the 20th century. So we have reference to doorkeepers, their duties, who they were, how important the job was. So differing from these keepers of the threshold that we saw in Esther, in some respects, are the doorkeepers or the porters mentioned in Chronicles, Ezra, and Nehemiah. These formed an abundant sacred order. Let's go back to 1 Chronicles chapter 9 and verse 22. All these, which were, I'll start at 21 actually, and Zechariah the son of Meshelemiah was porter of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. All these which were chosen to be porters in the gates were 212. These were reckoned by their genealogy in their villages, whom David and Samuel the seer did ordain in their set office. So they and their children had the oversight of the gates of the house of Yahweh, namely the house of the tabernacle, by wards. Truly an appointed position, appointed by the king, and subject, of course, to scrutiny. These guarded the gates of the house of Yahweh, closing and opening them at the proper times, and preventing the unclean from entering the sacred enclosure. They had charge of the sacred vessels, the freewill offerings, and dwelt even in the chambers about the temple. They were Levites and came in from the Levitical villages every seventh day for service in their turn. Their office was honorable, ranking with the singers after the priests and Levites. Now, In Psalm 84, verse 10, probably, if you don't mind, let's look at that, because it's been mentioned to me several times in my walk in the truth, but it wasn't really until now that I came to a different conclusion. Psalm 84, verse 10. For a day in thy courts is better than a thousand. I had rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. Now, that's always been quoted to me, and it seems maybe a little demeaning to the doorkeeper. In other words, I'd rather do that than not do anything, or it just somehow, to me, implied a lesser position. So I was never fully convinced that, that was anything to, not really to aspire for, because we shouldn't be aspiring to any ecclesial office. But it seemed a little demeaning. I'll just put it at that. The Hebrew word for doorkeeper, shower, is not used there in its technical sense. The revised version margin reads stand. So I would rather stand in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. Now the King James Version margin has the word sit, and I'll read that there. I would choose rather to sit at the threshold.
Bob, I have stand in my margin. Stand at the threshold in.
Yeah.
It's in the King James.
Stand or sit. Those are the words that are. And to me, that makes a lot more sense. One, it doesn't to me demean the position of doorkeeper, but it does, I think, go with the previous verse of the tents of wickedness. In other words, I'd rather stand outside the door of a temple or sit at the threshold of a temple than to live in the tents of wickedness. Any questions about that? Yes.
Well, it might be that they would rather stand or sit without a job at all, right here at the temple, because that would be the place to be then, to be found
in the tents of wickedness.
Right. So,
yeah.
You know, it wouldn't be they were working there, but
yeah.
Then they were in the place where they knew they should be.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's to me, it made me feel better about the position of doorkeeper. I don't know why, but it did. And I think it's a conclusion that you know, we should look at and not jump at that verse because the word doorkeeper is in there. It's not properly translated. So to say, you know, yeah, I'd rather do that than be somewhere else. The position of a doorkeeper is one with a lot of responsibility. As we mentioned before, it's an elected position, so we look at people, look at their qualifications like we do all other things. Can they do the job? Are they apt to be on time? Are they apt to be late? Or whatever. Whatever the qualifications that Paul lays out in Scripture as to the role of any ecclesial position, then the doorkeeper is scrutinized by those same scriptural verses. Now, in the New Testament, the order of temple doorkeepers is not really referred to, but a doorkeeper is mentioned in connection with a private house. Let's go to Mark 13 and verse 34. Okay, this is going to mention a doorkeeper in connection with a private home. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house, his private home, and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work, and commanded the porter, the thureros, doorkeeper, to watch. Now, if we turn to John 18, and look at verses 16 and 17, we'll look at the doorkeeper being mentioned at the high priest's house. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. So here we have a damsel keeping the door. Now let's look at that. We'll stay in John and we'll look at that same word, thureros, doorkeeper, and its connection with sheepfolds. That shouldn't surprise us. John 10, verse 3. Now, I wasn't advocating that sisters be elected to the role, but I just wanted to make sure that we knew that there were faithful sisters as well who at times kept the door. Okay. John 10, verse 3. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. So in reference to the Lord Jesus Christ here, in a very clear sense, he is the ultimate doorkeeper, the ultimate porter. He's also the door. The sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. Now, we found one reference to where a maid served as doorkeeper. Let's look at another one in Acts 12. Probably all know that. Verse 13. Acts 12, verse 13. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came to hearken, named Rhoda. And when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness, but ran in and told how Peter stood before the gate. And they said unto her, Thou art mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then said they, It is his angel. But Peter continued knocking, and when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. So the first one to run to the gate, hearing that knock, was Rhoda. And we don't know any of the circumstances. Maybe she was the nearest one. Maybe she was the only one that heard the knock. Don't really know. But she was the first to be at that door. Didn't open it, but the first to be at the door. So here we have two indications that maids, well, one indication clearly that a maid was serving as a doorkeeper. And the other, we're not as positive. Yeah, Marcia.
Well, maybe they weren't doorkeepers, as you say. They may have been the closest one to the door. I mean, they certainly wouldn't have been given the position of doorkeeper as we're expected to work.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were there at the door. Yes, they opened the door. But that's all it did.
Yeah.
But she didn't open it.
Well, Rhoda didn't open it. The other one did. The other one was, to me, in my mind, was clearly a doorkeeper in that sense. Now, it may be that there's extenuating circumstances that we're not told. It does seem odd that a sister would be in that position, given the history of the Hebrews.
And maybe they weren't even a sister.
Well, okay, that's probably an assumption on my part. All right, a woman, a damsel.
What's a damsel?
Young woman. I'll give her the benefit. She's a young woman.
The house of the high priest could be in circumstance.
Yeah? So it doesn't necessarily have to be a male in a high priest's home. Well, the pattern we have obviously have taken is that of the Old Testament, the doorkeeper, the porter. In the New Testament, I guess maybe it's not as clear or as important because the ultimate doorkeeper has been revealed. I don't know. But anyway, we can see clearly, brothers and sisters, that the position of a doorkeeper is one of service and clearly one of importance that should never be taken lightly. And as any elected position in the ecclesia, it should be held by responsible brethren according to the same scriptural references, as I mentioned before, by the Apostle Paul, that are used in electing any other brother to any kind of duty within the ecclesia. Now that said, I think we're in a position to go through the Granite State Constitution and what's written here about doorkeepers. The doorkeeping brother shall arrive 1/2 hour earlier than the scheduled time for the beginning of the meeting. He shall be responsible for greeting each person as they enter. He shall provide guests with hymn books and Bibles if needed. He shall notify the secretary of visiting brothers and sisters and their names and home ecclesias. He shall distribute welcome cards to unbelieving visitors. He shall direct any latecomers to appropriate seats. He shall personally request that a parent of an unruly child remove the child from the memorial service. In the Constitution, not my words. He must handle any other outside interference. He shall see that the doors are closed and that the meeting will not be disturbed during the offering of prayer and reading of Scripture. And he shall be responsible for closing up the meeting place. And that last one is the only one that I don't have trouble with it, but I think we shouldn't hang on to that too rigidly. There are circumstances where doorkeepers need to leave, perhaps earlier, than others who are lingering and socializing. And so I wouldn't hold those people accountable to close up the meeting place. But it is in our ecclesial constitution, so it needed to be put forward.
It's also, it was a very important position in the cities when it was the gate. You know, the same thing, like you had the officials there, you might have the king there at certain times, or so that was a very important.
Yeah.
The only place you wouldn't get in.
Yeah.
So that's another.
Well, it's my understanding that the gates of the cities were the places where they did official business. And so they were important places. And naturally, the doorkeeper, you know, in his role of keeping people out and making sure that business ran smoothly and honestly and whatever, was absolutely crucial. So, yeah. And I keep thinking of Lot. Lot met the angels at the gates. The gates of this. He sat outside, didn't he? Didn't he sit outside the gates? His soul was vexed. I'm getting closer.
19:1. Lot sat at the gate and saw.
19:1. Yep, sat in the gate of Sodom. He sat as judge. Verse 9. where it reads, "And they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with him." And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. Yeah, all right, so he sat in the gate of Sodom. All right, well, we're just about through. If anybody has any questions, any more questions?